the man of the hour, Madison Police Chief Mike Koval. Hello, Chief.
I'd like to be calling in from New Zealand. I've never been there.
Well, you can enjoy the sheep. You know, the late Al McGuire always wanted to retire in New Zealand. I don't think he ever did
though. Well, you know, you do now know that we are both of the Geritol set, and anybody that's trending young will not know what
well,
the hell
that's
just
true.
About
the
former,
the late great Marquette legendary coach.
Oh God, an icon.
Yes,
an icon.
Yes, he was, and of course your son goes to Notre Dame, so there's a rivalry there for years.
Of course, and this week we're going to pee on the DePaul Blue Demons opening of their new stadium by handing them a loss this Saturday at 4 o'clock.
This Saturday they play already against DePaul.
Yes,
wow.
Yes. Yes. New, down in Chicago.
New downtown arena for the Blue Demons. Anyway, here we are. The mass shooting, Chief, and the whole talk about gun control and gun laws all over the news, 24/7 cable. And as it turns out, this person shouldn't have been able to buy a gun over the counter because he had been discharged from the military for beating his wife and infant stepson, and had they simply shared that information with the FBI or the database, he wouldn't have been able to buy a gun over the counter.
Yeah, it's really disturbing. And I think, frankly, what we are now seeing is that that was not an isolated incident. And there's been a pervasive underreporting across the spectrum from our armed forces, which is very concerning.
So that is just negligence on the part of a large organization, in this case, the military.
Well, it would appear that I don't know why they would not have known that federal law mandates them, that there is no immunity, qualified or otherwise, just because you're serving our country in that capacity. So those federal laws have been on the book for some time, so this isn't like there's a novelty with the reporting requirements.
Well, it's kind of like, whoops, I guess I screwed that up. It's like not seeing the Titanic on those flares, you know, from 10 miles away.
It is concerning, that's for sure. I'm certainly, we're going to see some very embarrassed looks of exasperation in these Senate hearings that you know will convene as a result of that revelation.
Well, there's no question, and it would bring me to the topic of all these laws we have on the books, and apparently that are not enforced in many cases, and I've heard that regarding people who buy guns with criminal records, and they just kind of, I'll forget about it, but just chance it or however that, and they slip through the cracks. I mean, I read about that. I mean, when Peg Lautenschlager was U.S. attorney, we would ask her about it from the media, and she'd say, well, it's what happens, you know, question of priorities and law enforcement and so forth. So what about that, Chief? What about laws that are on the books now that could make a real difference but aren't enforced?
Well, that's just the thing. When you see how these things have, what did I read the other day? Are we up to like two guns for every man, woman, and child in our culture now in the United
States?
Yeah,
that's about right.
The number is unabating and getting more so. And the fact of the matter is that you're right, that between, I think there's a lot of little wiggle rooms here. For me, I was sort of befuddled with why we can't have universal background checks. I mean, I think...
Okay, so that's what we don't have. That. What about laws we do have that should be enforced? We'll start with that, and then we'll...
Well, I think, first of all, obviously, domestic violence have been one of those sort of common denominators that we're seeing in the more stark serial killers, like the mass shooters that we've seen now. Domestic violence is not an anomaly. And so if that is, in fact, through a recurring theme, why in the world we wouldn't place a priority or an emphasis on getting those into a database with a sense of urgency it mystifies me.
So there's a case where we already have laws that say you can't get a gun with domestic violence, but yet we are sloppy in enforcing or doing the database updates. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, that's just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned universal background checks. I've heard on conservative talk radio, oh, they're already background. Well, they're background checks for gun dealers, for licensed gun dealers.
Right.
Now, when you say that, are we talking about deals that go down in the parking lot or in the hallway of a gun show?
Yeah, there are so many exemptions. You're absolutely right. Those universal background checks can happen quite quickly with a phone call and a computerized entry, frankly. Those things, those are fairly automated and fairly easy to get. but as between private practitioners, the gun show exclusions, and then we also
But I'm sorry, Chief. There is no gun show exclusion for the licensed dealer at the gun show.
Correct. We're talking about the private party.
Right,
that
a private sale that happens in the parking lot or
exactly.
in the hallway, right? Okay.
Exactly. Exactly. And I'm glad you put that point of clarification on it, Mitch. That's an important distinction to make. The other thing we've seen is, of course, we have what we call the straw man, but this is Madison, so the straw person purchaser, where I'm unqualified or ineligible to have a handgun, so I have my girlfriend or my best friend or my mom in some instances act as the purchaser. They obviously clear waivers in the background, and then they ceremoniously turn it over to me and I pay them back or pay them a little back with a premium. We also have instances in some of the more urban settings like Milwaukee where they have the human holster commodity where they're best friends or members of their gang or the people they run with who are eligible or a youth who will have less sanctions if caught, they'll have that person literally have the gun in close proximity to the person who ultimately uses it. They can use the gun and then turn it right back over to what we call the human holster. So between straw purchasers and between human holsters that we see from time to time in the urban markets, there are so many different ways to get around it.
So you take the safest straw purchaser, whether it's a law-abiding person you find out or want to pay, and then, or the younger person without much of a record doing it. Although the younger person has to be 21, obviously, right?
Right.
Okay. So,
the human holster, if it's a 16-year-old that hangs with you, you see what I'm saying? Those implications are that kid is going to be caught in a juvenile youth authority versus
Well, how does the human holster get the gun?
However they've gotten the gun, they just
Then they have the kid.
Yes.
Well, he carries the gun after it's been bought.
Yes.
Right. Okay, I see. Well, how do we stop all that, Chief?
Well, I'll tell you, it feels like that the crevices in the proverbial dam are leaking and cracking on so many different flashpoints. I mean, I'm sort of old school, and I know that I probably don't have the empirically backed data to say definitively, but when you think about the ordeal of what that family went through at the Metro Market a little over a year ago in the winter, where their daughter was killed by a coworker who had been basically stalking her. On the east side of Madison.
Right.
When you look at the footage and realize that this person was able to get a gun through conventional legal means faster than when I got my pizza waiting in line to carry out on Friday.
Right.
That was sort of a stark sort of thing.
I got to tell you, I don't know if you have a daughter, Chief. I have a daughter, and, you know, I'm not a big Charles Bronson guy with a gun at night on the subway, but I'll tell you this. If it's my daughter and somebody's stalking her to the car from work, I would like her to have a 44 Magnum, you know, or a cannon.
Oh, and again, you know, there's no small coincidence that if you look through what what Wisconsin has done in terms of the licenses generated under the concealed carry permitting process, I mean, it's through the roof. So you're not alone in that ideology.
Well, because
a lot of people feel that
way. I had people on after that happened, and of course they were from the progressive side, and so you can't blame the victim. And all. I said, I'm not blaming the victim, but how do you get from the building to the car?
Without incident.
And they say, well, that's not the point. The point is he shouldn't have. Okay, I understand the argument. He shouldn't have had the gun.
Sure.
But guess what? He had a gun.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like going into the theater in Colorado when there's six military people in the theater, but they didn't have firearms on it. I mean, the Texas dude across the street had a rifle, right? The guy could have killed more people. All I'm saying is, if it's my daughter walking to the car and there's a stalker with a gun, I want her to have a gun. Is that terrible to say?
No,
I don't think so.
Because we all draw the line at protecting me and mine, and I get that, and that's how people feel these days. They feel, as I can see, it's warranted. The police can't possibly be there to protect us against all evils. and there are so many prohibitions. What is sacred, Mitch? I mean, we see houses of worship, whether they're a Sikh house of worship, a temple, a church, a mosque, a mall, a school. Where haven't we seen this rear its ugly head? So given that that's sort of the pervasiveness of, and I think right now if you count mass shootings as, I think the FBI index is at 3 or more in a single incident, we're averaging one of those every 15 to 16 days in the United States.
Well, it's insane. Don't get me wrong, Chief. I'd rather have that person not have the gun. I mean, that's sure. My first choice.
Absolutely. And
I've said on the air many years, you know, if I knew that we could get every gun, I'd be for it. But we can't do that. I mean,
no, and the fact of the matter is as I always say to some people that think I'm not strident enough about anti-guns, is that the problem is the genie is out of the bottle. The guns are there. They're there in mass. So, yes, I would be the first on my block to say, and as a person who hopefully has some impetus on forming policy, we should emphasize the preventive means to keep people who are unqualified from not getting these guns. We should be continuing to look at what are the signs that we can look for early intervention. We can continue to look, and in fact, as some people have said, if we get down to the dearth of the mental illness issues and episodic breaks, yes, we need to enhance and expand our treatment options in mental illness. But all that...
How about red flags?
All of that is preemptive, but that doesn't solve the problem of the violence breaking out right from underneath their feet.
No, it doesn't. But I remember the case where a couple of a television reporter and a producer were shot in the morning show out in Carolina a few years ago.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
And this guy had been previously belligerent at that station as a former employee who had to be taken out by police. So, so in other words, that sounds like a red flag. It's not common that somebody is taken out of a place of employment because they're belligerent to the point where police have to come.
Exactly.
Now, to me,
you're right. That's a time where there was the opportunity to look at that as an intervention option.
Right. But we don't ever do that, is my point.
No, we don't.
So we have all these red flags, and I'm sorry, I don't want to live in a police state, but you know what? If somebody's a hothead where they're going to be doing that, I want that known by police or by the gun register. I don't know how you'd go about that in terms of him buying a gun.
Yeah, and you know, we're talking about the things that would obviously be flags for us, and obviously the military clearly did not live up to the expectations of reporting these things in a timely fashion, and it sounds like it's a lot wider scale than any of us would hope to have imagined. But between that and the other thing that concerns me is there's no sense of uniformity on what constitutes sort of that which is the equivalent of a civil commitment, and people who are having mental illness breaks and their access. There's a lot of leaky holes there in terms of who can access guns, too, without being disqualified.
As I understand it, professionally licensed psychologists, psychiatrists, therapists, if the client is expressing an intent to commit violence...
Then they have a duty to report.
Yeah, they do, currently, right? Mm-hmm. So, now, I don't know what happened in the case of the Virginia Tech shooter. I know he had a mental illness history, but I'm not sure what that entailed.
Yeah, I don't know to what extent that was ever formalized as an involuntary civil commitment, though. I don't recall the circumstances in that instance.
Okay, so at least we start with universal background checks. In other words, of course, see, that reminds me of the person who sells a car to somebody who's got 8 OWIs, and that's happened, Chief.
Oh, sure.
Because you're selling somebody a car in cash on your front lawn or in the back. And you say, well, is the seller supposed to be involved in law enforcement? I say, well, yes. I mean, make them go down to the DMV and have the buyer authorized? Is that too much to ask?
Well, that's just the thing. You know that you've been gracious about listening to me talk about this, but invariably when we have a tragedy in Madison on the homicide scale, the reporters, your brothers and sisters, colleagues, as it were, are very quick to pounce upon, what number are we at? And I always say, well, it depends on how you count, because they all want to know the people that are dead by virtue of an edged weapon or a firearm or something, you know, like that. But I say, well, doesn't anybody want to count the four people, five people that I've lost this year, who, through no fault of their own, were killed by a two-ton bullet. It's called a car drive recklessly.
Well, and by multiple offenders, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, but somehow people don't think it's a responsibility of a seller to do law enforcement or, in a sense, go down with the buyer to, because the DMV would immediately show that this person can't buy a car because he has seven or eight OWIs. And aren't we to the point, Chief, where, yes, you know, when it comes to a gun or a car, yes, the answer is yes.
Well, and you know, these days your discussion about the car is always interesting, because when we did Shake the Lake, people were highly perplexed and vexed at it got a lot of feedback, because I always go to all these big events, and they say, why do you have these huge concrete barriers entering into the aesthetics and the optics of that? And I see a couple of your officers posted at the entries, both at Broome Street as well as Blair Street, and my gosh, I see they have slung rifles in clear plain view, and I'm like, such is the new normal of our world. Have you not seen any of the footage from Europe or even in our own United States, in New York City? That's the sort of considerations that when people say, how's Freak Fest going to go? I can give you my conventional answer, Freak Fest, but then I also have a contingency Freak Fest where I'm also planning for that kind of disturbing element based on what we see taking place.
Well, and I think most people who go to Freak Fest want security. They want police.
I hope so.
It's like when you hear a member of Congress from an inner city where there's a lot of crime, they're the ones that want more police. I mean, I've heard that time and time again.
Well, you know, it's getting to the point, you know, people are, some are very mortally offended by the extent to which the government is dipping into zones of privacy on people. And yet I say, you know, you don't realize it, but it's been pervasive over a number of years. You want to go to that rock concert? You want to go to that football or basketball game at the Kohl Center or Camp Randall? You're submitting yourself to a full outright search, you know, because just because you have a ticket doesn't guarantee your privacy.
Well,
you want to get on that plane? Assume the position. TSA can, with no cause or any cause, decide who's going to be searched for a secondary or tertiary search. There's a lot of ways. You know, lately in Madison, of course, everybody's up in arms. Well, we're concerned about the police use of surveillance. I'm like, these cameras are in public places and public spaces to view public activities. We don't have them centered on people's bedrooms and violating their Fourth Amendment rights. We're looking at, as do many major cities, where we see people coming and going, and particularly at some of these major arterial streets. If they've just robbed someone at the 7-Eleven, I'd kind of like to see what the color of the car was in their plate. So there's so many things that people find very incompatible with rights of privacy, and yet I would suggest that the government has inserted itself from a standpoint of public safety into a lot of these
games. Oh, sure. Well, I went to the game last week in Wisconsin, Indiana, in Bloomington, and my aunt, her purse, she had to go back to the car. It was a long way away because they only allow purses to be clear, plastic, clear purses, or you can't go in. And of course,
now you know what to get her for Christmas. Now they have those specially approved stadium see-through handbags for people who
That's what they had. She could have used one. But then she had things in her purse she didn't want anybody to see. That's a problem.
Yes,
I mean, let's face it. So, anyway, here's the point. You need a little flask in there or God knows what. I don't know what else would be in there. But, I mean, there's a certain amount of privacy that people aren't willing to exchange. But in summary, though, Chief.
By the way, if you've been a faithful follower of Indiana football, you're going to need a flask to get through your pain.
Well, don't assume there weren't arrangements made. Now, here's the deal. So when you say universal check, how do we get the person in the hallway or the parking lot to, to be registered or to check the gun that goes from his or her hands into the hands of the buyer?
Yeah, you literally would have to probably establish a secondary market for doing just that as a single one-time transaction, having them basically broker the deal.
Yeah, but I mean, they have to register.
Right.
I mean, they're at the site.
They have to register the firearm and who the purchaser is, who's the seller, and has the who the buyer is, and how have they been identified, and all.
Well, because and the way to enforce it then would be to trace the gun. Of course, there'd be no way to trace that transaction if they don't play ball, right? I mean,
exactly. And the fact of the matter is that there's going to be how many of those informal transactions that will never.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, we can talk big about universal background. What does it mean?
It's at best a good faith attempt to get the more blatant transactions to go underground and make it a little more difficult. But your point is well taken. If someone is so motivated, I guarantee they can get a gun. I guarantee they can get a gun in Madison.
Well, unless you have somebody that knows the buyer,
right,
who then sees it on the news in 6 weeks. But, I mean, the chances of that are pretty slim, aren't they, Chief?
Certainly. They are.
So, really, it's words at this point on universal background checks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like this conversation with 19-year-old ID. We'll talk about it later. When I was 19, I had a fake ID. I mean, I had that for years.
Did you buy yours from the back of Rolling Stone magazine where you had all those things you could send away for?
No, it was a guy in the dorm named Ron. You know, I looked a little bit like Ron, and I used it, I used it for years. I felt like those years went on forever. But if you wanted to do anything socially,
yeah,
go to a bar, go to a restaurant with a bar, go to a dance club, you had to have a fake ID. Now,
The
alternative at 19 would have been able to stay at home in the dorm room and have Hawaiian punch. And I got to tell you something, Chief, that wasn't really on the table. So all my friends had fake IDs.
I am certain that there are entrepreneurs out there because we seem to be confiscating really good fake IDs every weekend downtown here.
Well, I won't even tell you, you know, who I know that over the years had fake IDs. But all I'm saying is that I had one. All my friends had them. And, you know, the tradition has gone on. So I'm thinking just make it legal at 19 so we don't have to have all that monkey business.
Yeah, well, and again, it's interesting. I'm being very careful because I know you have a
I know you can't. I know what you can do.
I personally could obviously imbibe at age 18 because I'm as old as Methuselah.
Oh.
And that's when the law was. I hope the city attorney isn't listening. For me, myself, and I, not speaking as the chief of police
right,
of Madison County, I personally have a certain conflict in the sense that, let's see, now they can be held liable for any contracts they entered into, including marriage, God forbid. They can serve our country in the armed forces.
Right.
The whole nine yards, but gosh darn it, they can't
have a beer.
Light.
Well, and also you are encouraging illegality and fake IDs. And I know the person who's home with a glass of milk and, you know, cutting the plants, I mean, I don't believe that's right. I mean, of course, I'm not going to try to say it's noble or right. I'm just saying
There's
a certain amount of street reality.
And that's true. And I think that's the thing that the essence of this conversation has said, is that you can take all the preemption and create all the rhetoric and legislation you want, but where there's a will, there's a way, and they will find a way to get a gun if they're so inclined.
Okay, so we've discussed that, yes, universal background checks sound good. How they would be enforced is another question, right, Chief?
Well, yes, exactly. It would be difficult. And again, what you're trying to do is make the degree of difficulty a little bit more cumbersome. So when we have those private practitioners who boldly go to, say, a show, or they're selling it on a Craigslist or something, at least they're going to be a little bit more apprehensive about looking over their shoulder
before
submitting the deal.
You can trace Craigslist a little easier, but because you got a trail of print.
Sure. Sure.
But if somebody buys one in the parking lot, the gun show, or in the hallway, or in the gym, you're not going to be able to enforce that law.
No.
Unless somebody knows the buyer and squeals when the crime is committed. And the chances of that are like me breaking 70 now after the stroke. I mean, it's just, I don't want to sound pessimistic, but is that not fair to say, Chief? I mean, come on.
Yeah, you're absolutely. Your pragmatism is really depressing me today, Mitch.
Well, I'm sorry.
I find some resolution, and I could go on with my life with a little bit of giddy up in my step.
At least we did say that we should enforce the laws we have in the books against domestic violence offenders. That should be done.
That should have been done in this instance, and it should have been done for decades. We've had it on the books for a while now.
What about the one about people that have criminal records that buy guns and slip through the cracks because law enforcement doesn't have a lot of priority to go after all of them?
Well, that's just the thing, is that it's going to have to probably be flagged at the point of sale, because I don't think in a lot of these instances they're county sheriff's departments that are doing some of those secondary checks. They don't have the resources to flag all those down.
Well, so again, you have a law where if you're a felon, you can't buy a gun, but somebody did a bar fight at 18, and now they're 43, and they go buy a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, nobody knows, because we don't have a system that says, oh, no, this person's a felon.
Well, and the other thing that's been sort of convoluted is that some states are better than others as identifying specifically whether that crime that they were convicted has a predicate in domestic violence. We've often seen instances where someone who was charged with a battery, I mean, if you look in our state statutes, you're not going to see domestic battery. You're not going to see domestic disorderly conduct. You're going to see disorderly conduct, or you're going to see battery. And, oh, by the way, it's only after you realize the relationships of the parties that you then sort of put that enhancer label around it, and hopefully that's what's captured when they do the entering into the database. But I've seen instances where things that were rooted in domestic violence were only covered as straight crimes, and in that sense, they're also being dropped.
So
they're not being covered properly.
So domestic violence, those words aren't in there in the...
In some states, it's not universally. You know, it's sort of cover language.
Okay, so we have no uniformity there.
There isn't.
But a felon's a felony is a felony, right, Chief?
A convicted felon should be a convicted felon, and that's why I'm saying that should show up as they're doing those data checks, and that should have been right at the point of a sale.
Okay, but why wouldn't it show up? I mean, would somebody just not put it in the database?
It would have to seriously have just been because someone failed to enter it into the database for, well, some call it the III, Interstate Identification Index.
Uh-huh.
I'm old enough to call it the old rap sheet, the Record of Arrest and Prosecutions, and these days it would be in CCAP. So, you know, it's all over the place.
What percentage of felons, probably nationwide, are not put into the database, and so they...
I have no idea.
Okay, but you think it'd be significant because of just...
Again, it just depends on how circumspect those who take those criminal convictions once they're made in circuit court and then get it into a database. That's the only link that would be missing here.
Chief, final minute. I mean, to wrap it up with one bit of summation on this, what would you say?
I don't think that in spite of our best efforts, as you have in as much made reference to, is that all of the laws in the world may impede, deflect, or delay someone from getting access to a gun who shouldn't have access to a gun. But at the end, our best causes lie more with the prevention, preemption, and intervention things and getting treatment for people who are mentally ill than to constantly go back and forth about what sort of enabling legislation is going to absolve us from tragedies like this. I just don't think there's a one-size-fits-all pill that will cure this.
All right, and this guy beat up a dog and smashed his infant stepson, so I don't know. Good luck with therapy on that one, Chief.
Yeah.
I'll let you have that next client. And you can.
Oh, brother. Well, isn't that the truth?
Chief, thank you very much, and go Irish against Miami.
You know, it has that sort of vibe which petrifies me, because right when I think we're getting relevant again, I don't want to have hit a speed bump and leave Miami with a loss. So thank you. I hope you're not patronizing me and you are sincerely hoping for the
Irish
to win.
I am. I remember Catholics versus Convicts back in 88. So.
Well, it was a good marketing ploy. I don't know if it was very PC then or now.
Probably not, but great game. Thanks, Chief. Good luck.
Take care.
All right, take
you
care,
too.
Chief.
Bye-bye.
Mike Koval. Thank you so much.